Welcome to the Breakfast Leadership Show, where we interview global thought leaders on business, leadership, and life. Here's your host, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, Michael Levitt.
Welcome back. I've got Dr. Paul White on the line. How are you today, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Michael.
Great to be with you today. For those that don't know who you are, why don't you share a little bit about you and then we'll dive into the conversation.
Yeah, so I'm actually a psychologist by training. I've done a variety of things. For a while, I did consulting with highly successful family-owned businesses dealing with business succession issues and family issues intertwined with that. And that led to the opportunity to co-author some books with Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote The Five Love Languages. And he focuses really on personal relationships. And we've applied the five languages to work-based relationships and workplace culture, how to help make workplaces positive and healthy. So that's sort of the focus of what we do now.
That's very, very important work. And we've seen the aftermath of organizations that don't focus on the well-being of their employees, whether it was the great resignation, quiet quitting, the whole hybrid work, remote work, in-person discussions that continue, you know, well after, you know, we've been 4 years since the COVID pandemic happened or started, and there's still just a lot of discussions around it. And I think one of the missing components from it is just, you know, there's a disconnect between organizations and employees, and that disconnect seems to get more and more stronger as time goes on because people aren't having the conversations that they need to have.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the COVID pandemic either taught us or brought back to our awareness was that, you know, employees are people and we have lives beyond work, and our lives outside of work and work intertwine, sometimes one way, sometimes the other. And if we don't pay attention to that and we just focus sort of on employees as work units or production units and look at the output, we're really going to go down a wrong path that's going to create some problems for us.
Yeah, it's been, I've seen it all the time, especially with people that are burning out, whether it's the leaders or the employees or everyone in between. There's a lot of it due to just, again, goes back to communication, but it also goes back to, do I feel valued? Do I hear or do I feel heard? Are my contributions actually making a difference in this organization, or am I just a number, you know, or a cog? And people want more than that. And you know, the argument is, well, you know, your work helps you do the things in life you want to do outside of work. But you know, think about it, you know, the most consecutive hours of our day that we are awake tend to be in a work setting. Yeah. So I don't want to be this robotic thing and just like, I don't care, I'm just going to go and do my thing, because I've been in that mindset, not often, thankfully, but I've been in that mindset before, and it's not healthy. It doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make me feel motivated. It actually just makes me feel worse. I'd much rather have the, you know, the groove of you getting some work done and accomplishing some things and having some conversations around things, or just learning, you know, being observant of what's going on in the workplace. And when I've been in environments that allows that to happen, those are great organizations to be a part of.
Yeah. And one of the things, especially now with more remote and hybrid workers, one of the things we do research along the way, and we did research pre-COVID, during, afterwards. And one of the things we learned about remote and hybrid workers is you really have to be proactive in interacting at a personal level. And that's actually one of the things that we found that made a difference, is that people that survived really that early sort of traumatic working from home and away from things better than those that didn't, they stayed connected with their colleagues, not necessarily their supervisor. It was proactive both ways. You had to sort of, you know, initiate. And it was at a personal level, that it wasn't just about, you know, how's the project going, but how are you doing? You know, are the kids playing soccer yet? All that kind of stuff. And so interesting, you know, I'm a psychologist and people say, oh, it's touchy-feely. And then we talk about the word appreciation and people sort of think it's just, the goal is to, you know, make people feel good. And you know, that's nice and we'd like that to happen. But actually, we have tons of research. And in our book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, we've got, I don't know, over 50 research citations that show how when team members feel valued and appreciated, good results happen in the organization. And I sort of use the image of oil in a machine. You know, you've got machine engine that's got parts working together. It's got friction, heat, sparks. It gets stuck if there's no oil. And really, appreciation is sort of like the oil. It helps make teamwork go better. Positive results. We know productivity goes up, profitability goes up, customer service ratings go up, turnover goes down, which is a huge issue now. So it's practical, you know, and also there's less conflict and less sort of irritation over stupid little things that people can get chippy about, you know, whether it's the size of their monitor or parking spot or whatever. When they feel valued, those things sort of slip off. So,
yeah, it's important. And, you know, we're roughly, you know, I'm not going to ask your age, but I think we're in the same ballpark as age. And growing up and working early in my career and actually throughout my career, you know, there's been a ton of people that I've worked with that became really good friends. And I sense that that's not necessarily as common over the last couple of decades, which I find in a way kind of weird. Just that's just an observation. I have not done any studies or research.
Well, the research, you know, on loneliness is huge, right? And people feel disconnected. And so you're right. Your observation is right that that's going on. And I think the remote aspect adds to that. And one of the key components right now of sort of workplaces that are doing well is they're helping teammates, colleagues stay connected at a personal level. You know, a lot of people, a lot of leaders have misconceptions about appreciation when they hear. First is they sort of confuse it with employee recognition. And employee recognition, when it's done right, you know, can be a good thing, but it's largely about performance. I mean, reaching goals and so forth. We really believe that appreciation is about the person in addition to performance, that we have value beyond just what we do and produce. And people feel that. I mean, they know when they only hear positives when they're reaching their goals. What happens, you know, when external circumstances affect their performance out of their control, they cease to, you know, not have value. So that's a key part. Like I said, the goals in the same make them feel happy. Another thing that's changed over the years is that in the old days, when we were younger, you know, recognition and appreciation was really focused between the manager, supervisor, and the worker. There was sort of a top-down kind of thing. Now, younger employees really focus more on peer collegial relationships that, yeah, if they get on with their supervisor, fine, but it's really more important that they hang out. And so that's a key piece to make things work well.
I give you a real life example recently, helping out an organization, and they do some coaching and training type of work. And one of the coaches, you know, arrived because they use transit, an area that has it, and it was running a little bit late. So she came right in to a meeting and, you know, literally sat down, logged in, went on the Zoom call, and was right in the meeting. And it was in the morning. And, you know, I looked, I'm like, she didn't bring a coffee. So I went and made a cup of coffee in the coffee machine, walked over, opened the door, handed it to her. You know, you thought I gave her, you know, $1,000 bonus. It was, right. But it was just for me observing a colleague going, oh, she didn't get coffee. And she's not the type of person where if you don't give her coffee, you know, all hell's going to break loose. She's not that personality, but it was just here. You know, and it's just, I wasn't expecting anything out of it, but, you know, she was like, thank you so much for the coffee. I'm like, it's okay.
Yeah, and that's a great example of actually probably two of the languages that we talk about. One is acts of service, doing something to just somebody to help them out, and the tangible gift. You know, in our model, tangible gifts aren't bonuses and raises and that kind of stuff. It's just small things that show that, you know, you getting to know your colleagues, you know, whether it's cup of coffee or maybe a magazine about their favorite sports team, or it doesn't even have to be a thing. It could be a link to maybe if they're one of your colleagues is starting to coach a soccer team for their kids, a link to a website that has a bunch of training activity or something. But It's just small things. And that's what we found about the five languages, is that it doesn't take a lot, but it's key to find out what's important to that person. And then, you know, when you hit the mark, it really makes a difference. And so, you know, we've created an online assessment called the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory. It's been taken by 400,000 people to 9 languages. And it identifies not only the language, words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts, and even physical touch. We can talk about that. But the specific action within that language, because 40% of people don't want to go in front of a group to be recognized, and it actually can become a negative. So even though you praise them, it can turn negative if you don't do it in the right way.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's people. My wife's a good example of that, where, you know, she is very introverted, but people say, yeah, but you're outgoing. It's like, yeah, I'm outgoing, but I'm introverted. So, you know, one-on-one conversation, she's fine. But, you know, to bring her up and hand her, you know, congratulations, employee of the month type of award, you know, she'd rather, you know, crawl in the back seat of the car and go, no, I'm just going to hang out back here. Thanks. You
exactly.
know, she just did. So that's key to understand, you know, what motivates your employees. And as you're talking, a thought came across my mind, which is more of a, you know, a statement than a question. It's kind of ironic, because, you know, for peers, a lot of people don't know each other very well at work. But with social media, for most people, not everybody, but for most people, you know, their lives are on social media. So you know where they ate last night, you know who their favorite team is, you know what concert that's coming up. So you know a lot about people just based on their social media presence. But when you get into a workplace, even with that fully out in the world to see, in a way, it's kind of ironic that people don't know each other in a work setting, because, you know, maybe they're not, you know, checking out each other's social media platforms. So it's just an interesting, you know, thought that came to mind on the nuance of social media and how, you know, we put everything out there, but when we're, you know, working with our colleagues, we're not as open about it, which is an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. You know, and that makes me think of another misconception that leaders often have, and that is that the primary responsibility of showing appreciation is the leader, whether you're a supervisor, manager, owner, whatever. And while we found over time, we've been doing this for 12, 13 years now, is that, yeah, we want leaders involved, but what's as important is to facilitate getting peers and colleagues connected. And so something a leader can do is help facilitate, let's say at a staff meeting or a team meeting, set aside some time at the beginning. If you wait to the end, it can get pushed off, right? But, you know, just to check in and see what's going on in people's lives, you know, it's what's going on with their kids or any new events or that kind of thing, to help facilitate that kind of communication among one another. Because, like you said, in some places, in a lot of ways, we've sort of bifurcated our lives. And that's why people, I think, feel lonely, partly because people don't know what's going on in their life. You know, that their spouse is in the hospital, or, you know, they're going to be selling a house and have to get ready for doing that. So, yeah, it's key to facilitate the collegial peer kind of communication as well as just between individuals.
It's really, you know, it's water cooler talk, even though we usually don't use the water cooler because we probably got filtered water coming out of the sink now. So, you know, it's like you hang out in the kitchen maybe, or in the hallway, or if it's remote, then it's, you know, and this was a thing that I think was my brother. There was a few organizations that do this. I know my brother's company that he works for, organization, you know, did that, was intentional about, okay, we're going to have a Friday afternoon, just get together. It's not a staff meeting. It's just kind of touch base, see where everybody's at. You know, in the early days of the pandemic, that was critical. And a lot of people really needed that, because we recognized really quick on, you know, you take out social interaction, you know, from the equation, it definitely made some interesting dynamics. And I've said this before on the show, and I don't think enough credit has been given to organizations and employees on navigating those first few months of the pandemic. Yeah. Because we went from going to the office 5 days a week, remote what, to, okay, we got to use Teams or Zoom or whatever platform they happen to be on. And they're like, I've never used this before. What's this all about? I got to get a camera. You know, it's like, how do I look? You know, what's in the background? And it was a traumatic experience on top of a traumatic experience for people. So exactly. the ability to, you know, navigate that and organizations to say, look, it's okay. We're all fumbling through this. Let's just figure out what works best for us. We'll adapt and adjust as time goes on. Just let us know. And even for me, I remember back to those early days, I was helping out a housing organization, and you know, we'd have, you know, a call or a meeting or something like that. And, you know, they all come in with their agendas of, okay, this is what we're working on. This is what the project's gone. And I'm like, nope, for the first 20 minutes of this meeting, we're going to go around the room and we're going to ask people how they're doing. And, you know, what do you need? What kind of help can you do? You know, or what kind of help do you need from any of us? You know, some ideas or suggestions on how you're navigating this. And it was one of those, people got more real at that point. Initially, they're like, okay, I don't want to be the first one. But, you know, I was like, all right, here's what's going on with me, you know, because my father had died literally, you know, 3 days before the pandemic was announced. Mm-hmm. So I was dealing with that, and then the world closing down and moving mom and packing up a house that they lived in for a quarter century. And it was surreal to say the least.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things going, you say, I don't know what traumatic experience to focus on first, because there was so many of them. And for me, it was initially, it was like, I'm not going to focus on any of them. I'm moving forward. Right. I got to deal with what we have right now. I'll take time and grieve and do whatever we need to do when the time is right. You know, when I need to do it, I'll do it. But it was just such a surreal time. And sharing that allowed people to open up and share even the frustration of not being able to fly overseas to go see family, or just all of those things. It made some teams a little bit more human. And I think that's where those love languages that Gary, you know, so eloquently wrote about. I'm frightened how old that book is. It's like, how in the world can that be that long ago?
Right.
But you know, it's a timeless book. And I think that speaks, and as is, you know, your book, it's timeless, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's been interesting. I mean, because most books don't have a real long tail. You know, we've been out 12, 13 years, sold 600,000 copies, 24 languages. We still sell 3,000 a month, which is more than what most business books sell in their lifetime, you know. And so obviously the issue of people feeling valued and appreciated is there. And with the remote part, in fact, I just did a series of 6 videos that are on our YouTube channel. It's Appreciation at Work is the YouTube channel. You can look for me on remote employees and understanding. We did some research about, first of all, you know, not all remote workers are the same, right? I mean, you got some that work, you know, across the country or across the world. Some are in the same, you know, city. How many days they work remote, their position. And so they're not a unitary group. So you got to figure out what the specifics are. But what they like about remote work, obviously, is saving time and money for commuting. But the two main things they don't like are a sense of loneliness and disconnectedness, and then the difficulty in connecting with colleagues, just for those sort of spontaneous chats where you just have a question that you want to ask somebody that you know they know what's going on. So, you know, and we've created actually a remote version of our inventory where the actions can all be done remotely. And, you know, we can figure out how you want to do this in the show notes or whatever. But if people email me, I set up an email, just yesdrpaul@gmail.com. I'll send them a sample report of the inventory so they can see what it looks like. And also we can create a group summary for teams so you can see what your teammates like, not only the languages, but the actions and then what they don't like, so that you don't accidentally make a mistake as well.
That's beautiful. I'll definitely have that included in the show notes. So in closing, I always ask this question. It's an unfair one because, you know, we're both old enough to remember, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? It's like, I can barely tell you where I'm going to see you in 5 minutes, much less 5 years. But, you know, it's like, yeah, I know where I'll roughly be, probably in the same spot. But at the end of the day, it's like, because of the research you've done all these years and all of that, you know, where are you seeing some trends of where you think things are going to go, you know, over the next bit, especially with the multiple generations in the workforce that we're seeing now? It's an interesting dynamic to see all of the different flavors of individuals and their needs, which, you know, can vary, and not to pigeonhole anybody, but certain generations tend to be a certain way versus others. But, you know, I've seen, you know, baby boomers, aged employees that, you know, act like what you'd see in a Gen Alpha type of situation, even though they're not necessarily in the workforce yet, but really close. But so I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is that there are some generational trends. One is that the younger the employee, the more likely they prefer quality time. Although across the board, every generation prefers words more than any other language. As a total group, 46%. So it's less than half. So one of the takeaways is if you only use words, which is what people think of when they hear appreciation, typically, you're going to miss over half of your team. So it's important to understand that there are other ways that people want to be shown appreciation. But quality time goes up, although it's still second or about equivalent to words for younger employees. But I think an important issue as we have more and more and continue remote workers and even totally virtual teams is that there's new neuroscience that's showing that the quality of interaction between people when they're in the same room face-to-face is significantly different than when we're interacting online, and that there's better understanding, better communication, better empathy when you're together. And so I really encourage, and I'm seeing, because I work with some, you know, multinationals, that teams need to get together at least occasionally, you know, once or twice a year. And maybe if you can't do everybody, you know, parts of teams, but to only know somebody virtually and only around work is going to lead to more miscommunication, mistrust, and things won't go as well. So I think leaders really need to sort of think about, okay, how can we pull people together? And that, you know, as you get older, I don't know if it happens as much, but when you retire, you know, or some kind of award, you get some kind of thing. Well, 7% of the population choose tangible gifts as the main way they want to be shown appreciation. And so, especially older ones, it goes down to 2%. It's like, I don't need another thing to sit on my desk, but they'd like to hear how they've impacted other people's lives and been beneficial. So I think those are important to keep in mind.
Definitely. It's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch as time goes on. So, Dr. Paul, I love this conversation. Where can people find out more about you and all this amazing work you're doing?
Yeah, our sort of mothership website is appreciationatwork.com, and it's the word at, so appreciationatwork.com. And find out about our book, assessment. We have online training that can help people, HR professionals, you know, take this and implement it. But again, if they email me at drpaul@gmail.com, I'll send them some sample reports so they can take a look at that as well.
I appreciate that. And I'll definitely have that in the show notes. So Dr. Paul, thank you again for this amazing work you're doing and for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it, Michael.
Thanks for listening to the Breakfast Leadership Show, part of the Breakfast Leadership Network. Visit breakfastleadership.com for tips on empowering your business and your life.